Hi, Carm Capriato here, and in just a moment, Joe Register and I will enlighten you with one of the topics we discussed at APEX 2018, Secure Vehicle Interface. Trust me, a powerful look at future technology that you will be involved with as the future of tech unfolds. Now, here's a taste.
So let's say, for instance, that you're a shop that does diagnostic work. You're an ASE-certified diagnostician. So you're certainly qualified to perform the kinds of repairs that need the information about DTDs and PIDs and so forth that come along from the network.
Yeah.
But if you're somebody who isn't qualified to get that information, then there may be less of a reason why you should have access to that. So knowing who you are is important.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hey, welcome, welcome, welcome to the aftermarket's premier long-form audio podcast. Many thanks to Federal Mogul Motor Parts for supporting the Remarkable Results Radio podcast. Now, when you need to search for parts or get the latest technical updates, even sign up for the Garage Rewards and Tech Loyalty Program to earn some swag, go to fmmotorparts.com. Carm Capriato here, and so humbled as we near the 400th RR episode, and I want to extend my gratitude to you. Thanks. Hey, keep the hunger for aftermarket information alive with the weekly sustenance presented to you by your industry colleagues. You know, we'll keep you updated with the latest tech and trends as you grow your business to new heights as we work hard together to build your aftermarket smarts. Hey, I'm giving away podcast swag. Yep, and you heard it right here. You can get some. In just a bit, I'll give you the password where you can earn a collector's coffee mug and mouse pad from the podcast. Hey, now meet Joe Register, the Vice President of Emerging Technologies at the Auto Care Association. Joe has over 40 years of experience delivering progressive systems solutions to companies in every channel of the automotive aftermarket. Joe has also managed a 30-bay repair shop when he was 25 years old, and yes, he knows what having grease under your fingernails is like. In this episode, Joe shares the importance of SVI, Secure Vehicle Interface, and its significance to our society and industry in this modern high-tech age. Hey, you'll get a first-hand look inside of the evolution of SVI, where, in essence, it's about granting secure and standardized access to vehicle networks, along with a profile of the individual who is authorized and authenticated to work on a vehicle. Joe talks about standards, intelligent transportation systems, how SVI is being designed, and the OE factor. I urge you to pay attention. If you've not jumped on board ATIS yet, then you'll be in the dust when SVI becomes an important part of the secure access to vehicle data. Find Joe's bio and our interview's talking points at remarkableresults.biz/E381. You're in for a front row seat to start your journey to understand the significance Secure Vehicle Interface will bring to the aftermarket like only your premier automotive aftermarket radio podcast can do. Hey, ready? Now let's meet Joe Register. A warm welcome to Joe Register, VP of Emerging Technologies Auto Care Association.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Carmen.
Hey, Joe.
Great to be here.
I don't want to tell this to Bill Hamby, but I think you have one of the most important jobs.
Oh, don't say that to Bill, whatever you do. But thanks. I mean, I think it's great work, and I'm very delighted to have this this role. It's it takes me places. It opens up different kinds of opportunities for the aftermarket. I'm just, you know, it's so exciting to
be
involved in this.
And I'm excited to talk about SVI. And as I just said that acronym, my listeners are going to go out and say, oh,
what?
Another acronym. Jeez, you know, when do I have to stop paying attention to acronyms?
Never.
Right. And especially once they know what SVI means. And I'm reading it and I'm reading it and I'm saying, oh my God, this is like almost one of the most important initiatives that you could possibly be working on as the outgrowth of where we are with ATIS, because ATIS is it, and ATIS will, if you don't know ATIS, Joe, I think you said to me the other day, then you're going to be lost when SVI shows up.
Well, the idea here is the fact that the connected vehicle is, you know, ADAS is about all of the automation that goes on with the vehicle today. And eventually, people are talking about automated, fully automated vehicles, autonomous vehicles. Essentially, what that is taking the automated vehicle and connecting it. so that it talks to other vehicles, talks to the, you know, the ITS, Intelligent Transportation Systems Infrastructure.
There was another acronym.
Yeah, another one. And V2V, vehicle to vehicle.
Right.
But all this connectivity is important. And in ITS, essentially, and the connected vehicle improves safety, saves lives because information gets passed about road conditions and the vehicle's proximity to other vehicles, and when it changes lanes, or if we have a bad actor, and a bad actor is a vehicle that isn't staying in its lane, or, you know, maybe in distress. It's not playing nice. It's a bad actor. And so those are very important to recognize as quickly as possible to get people to move around them, get out of the way, and be able to get the traffic flow restored as soon as possible. Maybe get an emergency truck out to go and help.
Okay. SVI, Secure Vehicle Interface.
Secure Vehicle Interface, right. So if you want to think about it, I guess, from the highest level, the aftermarket has been thriving for years, despite new technologies that are introduced by the OE. Of course, everybody was very concerned about the fact that, you know, we wouldn't be able to get the information to repair the car. And we had to take some legislative action, which I know you're very familiar with, on right to repair, Carm. Yeah. So really think about this as making sure that the right to repair legislation is still able to be depended upon with a connected vehicle. Because as the communication becomes wireless instead of a connection to the OBD2 port in a vehicle, the rules change and the way information is delivered changes. So we have to start including information about wireless access instead of just wired access. And we had to kind of leave that on the table the first time around with right to repair. And that's why it's important for us to go back and talk about this wireless connectivity. SVI can be implemented in either wired or wireless. And essentially, it is a secure, standardized, and direct access method to the vehicle networks. And this is going to keep us in the business of repairing cars in the future.
Can I put an umbrella, one word out that maybe helps define your initiative? Access?
Access. Access and the ability to be able to direct the information. So it's access and control of the information.
Access and control.
Yeah.
Are the OEs playing nice at the table?
The OEs have their own interests. And you know, I don't think about the OEs. I guess I work with them a lot. I don't think about them as an entity. I mean, they're all different. I mean, some of them are actually very supportive of access to the aftermarket, some much less so. What we're really interested in is getting a set of standards that are in place so they know what we need, and we are very clear about the kind of technology that we believe will support our needs. And we have a conversation about that that is apart from, you know, we need access and a bunch of emotional conversation. That's exactly right. We're getting it down to technology. And, you know, we really believe that the legislative piece, terribly important. But we have another way now to be able to have a conversation with the OE, and that's a conversation around standardization.
So you're really working to shape the future of aftermarket access.
Exactly, exactly. And we're doing that in using the same standards bodies that the OE is depending upon and has depended upon for years to give guidance in the ways that they design their vehicles, whether that's SAE or whether it's ISO or IEEE, all these other acronyms that we're going to throw around. Those are all standards bodies, and the OEs have depended on those for years and years for the way that they design their cars just from a standpoint of how the car operates within the confines of the vehicle.
But having standards is important.
Absolutely.
But access
is terribly important. And the access itself is one of those things where, if you think about it from a standpoint, just the idea of the number of vehicles on the road, and there's just not enough franchise dealer bays to be able to repair all the cars that are out there, Carm. Any rational OE fellow will tell you, we know we have to make information available for people to repair our cars after they've gotten out of warranty. Right. It's how they do that and what kind of information they provide. You know, it's an interesting perspective if you think about the role that the aftermarket service provider plays. they're part counsel as well as technicians. And so you may come with 15 different problems with your car. You come into a garage, they help you prioritize. They help you say, oh, we'll do this first and then do this. And then we can wait for a while to do that. And then we can do this in about maybe 5,000 miles. We can't just take a laundry list from somebody that says, okay, this is everything wrong with your car, and this is what it's going to take to get it back and, you know, in order. If we don't have the data to help make those decisions with the OEs, with the customers, it's up to the OEs to tell us everything that needs to get done. And quite frankly, there might not be customers that are ready to be able to do all that with their vehicles at one time.
So part of SVI, if you will, vetting out or building a profile of the individual who can gain access to the data?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so the security is really at two levels. One is that, are you who you say you are?
Okay.
That's authentication.
Authentication. Am I who I say I am?
Right.
Are there different who's in here?
Yes, absolutely. So let's say, for instance, that you're a shop that does diagnostic work. You're an ASE certified diagnostician. So you're certainly qualified to perform the kinds of repairs that need the information about DTDs and PIDs and so forth that come along from the network.
Yeah.
But if you're somebody who isn't qualified to get that information, then there may be less of a reason why you should have access to that. So knowing who you are is important.
I can't imagine how we're going to figure out the who's.
Well, the who's are really coming down to the fact that the people out there that are working in shops to repair vehicles have a way to be able to establish their capabilities, their credentials, and their skills. And that's one of the reasons ASE certification is so important. The OEs have gotten a bit prescriptive about this, and we're very concerned that they want to start certification programs for people to work on their cars. In the aftermarket, we're pretty sensitive to that kind of oversight.
But I believe they're doing it in the collision side.
Well, they are. And quite frankly, the collision folks seem to have been fairly receptive to doing that. We're not quite so receptive, Carm, and we feel it's important for us to monitor and control that ourselves. So we're looking for ways to do that.
Why do you say that? Wouldn't it help vet out the real qualified members of our industry?
So great. So let's talk a little bit about why every car is so different. And I'm going to use an example from the ADAS technologies on this.
Sure.
So if you take a look at the kinds of targets that are required in order to be able to properly calibrate the ADAS equipment, they vary widely. I mean, some manufacturers are saying you need 1,500 square feet in front of the vehicle in order to perform a proper recalibration. Now, I don't know the shops you've been in, Carm, but when I go into shops, I don't usually see that kind of space in front of an alignment rack. And so that differs very widely from another manufacturer who may say, well, I want 40 feet in front of the vehicle. I don't care how much distance there is on the sides. And somebody else says, we'll put the target out 20 feet. Why all the difference? Is there really that much difference between those vehicles? And what you really find is, no, there really isn't. And standards could be brought in to say, look, everybody should be working with the same kind of distances and the same kinds.
So what you're saying is that they all went out, they said, buy the target, put it out here, take a tape measure from this distance to that distance, put the target in. And so what you're saying is some of them targets are 20 feet, some of them are 40 feet.
Right.
And the point is why?
Why? Exactly. And you know, the point about this, I think, and it isn't necessarily, I'm not trying to paint a sinister picture of all OEs, but they think about it from the standpoint about their franchise dealers. Now, they work generally on one brand of car. And yes, I'm familiar with it. There are franchisees out there who will actually work on multiple brands, but most of them focus on the brand of vehicles that they sell in their dealership. And so they think about, okay, so how do I do this in the context of my vehicle? And they all reinvent the wheel every time they go through this process. And that's one of the reasons we're so focused on standardization, is to say, look, unless there's a real reason why your vehicle needs to vary widely from another brand of vehicle and another brand of vehicle, let's all get these so they're similar, so that a shop in the aftermarket is able to repair all these brands of vehicles in a proper and standardized way, so that they don't require you know, a football field in front of a vehicle if they have that particular model in. So that standardization is part of the way that we think we can talk about certification down the road.
Okay.
And be able to get some consistency in the aftermarket to make sure we have the right people working on cars.
I'm talking to Bud Houston, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Do you actually put products in the hands of the technicians?
Yes, absolutely. Anytime there's new product introduced, perhaps a new problem solver or a new technology, we keep that stuff on the van just because their local parts supplier may not have it available. And we think it's important to show them what's coming. And then seeing the part is really, especially with the new OEX, seeing the part and touching the part is something that changes perspective rather than just a piece of paper with a picture of the part.
Okay, so you put an OEX pad into the hand of a technician, and you've done this, I'm sure, hundreds of times. What do you see on their face when they see it?
You can tell they get it. You know, in our industry, there's technology that we use all the time that you look at, and you're like, that just doesn't make sense to me. I'm going to take your word that it works. You put an OEX brake pad in somebody's hand, and I just ask the question, why does this look so weird? And they're like, I bet it's to make it cool. They get it as soon as you put it in their hand.
So technicians holding your product and listening to your presentation, do you ever see the light bulbs go up? They raise their hand and says, boy, I've got a great idea for you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Not only does that happen, every time I'm with a group of guys, I solicit ideas. I'm like, listen, a lot of the stuff that I've shared with you originated in a bay somewhere where the technician said, you know what, if you could do this, it would be really cool. And so the stuff that I get, I send up, you know, to our engineering team and say, hey, could we do something like this? And there's things in the works, and there's some things that came out recently that originated in, hey, if you could do this, it would be helpful. Because at the end of the day, you know, I think Federal Mogul is known in every line to be a problem solver, and not just solving a problem, but making an installation easier as well.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. Hey, here's a reminder to get in on the November 2018 swag. Yep, get a collector's coffee mug and mouse pad. The password is learning. Go to remarkableresults.biz/swag to enter. Grab these podcast items to use every day. And don't forget, the password is learning. You said the word certification. Wow.
Mm-hmm. I mean, wow.
Yeah, I know.
Wow. I know. But you know what? The latest information I've heard from some of the OEs is by 2020, 50% of the cost of a vehicle is in the electronics. These are no longer mechanical creatures, Carm. They are a hybrid of computer and mechanical. And that computerization, that technology that's behind that, brings with it a level of sophistication that just wasn't there 40 years ago.
You're not afraid of moving into certification.
I'm not afraid of moving into certification, provided the fact that the aftermarket is the ones who say the types of certifications that are appropriate and what needs to be done.
We need to be at the table.
That's exactly right. We're not interested in the OE saying, well, you know, you need to be an expert on a BMW. Our whole point about this is that the information that's coming from the vehicle is typically, you know, sufficient for someone trained in diagnostics to be able to repair the vehicle. There are nuances between brands of vehicles, and there may be a small fraction of problems that will require someone to be an absolute consummate expert on a brand. But those are pretty few and far between.
Let's put our big vision cap on.
Sure.
ADAS level 5.
Mm-hmm.
I need to update one of the ECMs or the big ECM, and you know we're way down the road. I mean, you're saying that certification may have to be one of the biggest factors in getting data that's going to affect the performance and the safety of that vehicle.
And or getting data may be one of the biggest factors in being able to repair the car, right? Oh. So when you're talking about the communication that happens within the network itself in the vehicle, there's a lot of information flowing back and forth between these modules. Now, obviously, we don't need to be monitoring all that communication. Those communications are proprietary. They're things that each manufacturer has worked out for themselves. But as far as what is being sent as information that is at the overall level for the vehicle, such as the engine control unit, or when we're talking about the location of the vehicle on the road, all of these pieces are fairly generic in nature. The specifics in repairing one are always going to come from the OE when it comes to a flash of that software on a module. They're the experts of that module. We're not attempting to try to rewrite the software.
I get all that. But my question is that the person who's flipping the levers and getting inside, that, let me just make an assumption. Okay, I get access, I get OE data, but I have a sinister plan inside of me once I get in.
Sure. So I think there's two things about this. And the first one is it's important for us to make sure you've had the training and the expertise and all the rest before you get your hands on the vehicle. And this is back a bit to we didn't quite finish the conversation on authentication and authorization. So one of them is making sure you are Cam Capriano and that you have the credentials to prove that. The second one is, what are you authorized to do? You know, what kind of access are you provisioned?
So my profile will have...
That's right.
Ah.
So you actually have both the authentication and authorization working in tandem to say, you are who you say you are, and you're authorized to get this piece of information. Now, the extreme, most extreme case, you're not only authorized to be able to access data from the vehicle, but you're also authorized to be able to take software patches from the OE and apply those to an electronic module within the network.
Joe, is this Star Wars or is it on the table?
You know, I, as far as the access is concerned, again, as I said, there aren't enough OE franchise dealer bays to be able to repair all the cars. So the aftermarket has to be, you know, have the access to be able to properly do that. I think that what some OEs may envision, Carm, is maybe a bit of a different future where they guide a technician, regardless if they're in the dealer or they're in the aftermarket, with tools to say, you know, we've done the analysis, we've done the diagnostics in our back end, and we say, go over there and replace that part. Now, that's a very different future than what we think we envision in the aftermarket.
You know, Joe, it seems that the independent aftermarket will dig down to find the specific component of a part or a sensor, but the dealers will stop so far, go to the shelf, take that big thing, put it on the car, and it's like, okay, it's under warranty, so they charge GM, and here my independent owner has got to go out and acquire the part, do the kind of repair that falls within the price that the consumer can afford. I mean, my point is that we stop here. Are we parts changers or are we diagnosticians?
That's exactly right, Carm. You're spot on. And of course, the vision that we're concerned about is the one where you're just a parts replacer, right? Where all you are is someone who can follow instructions to get down and be able to change out a part. We think we provide a much superior product to the customer when we can actually counsel them and talk about, you know, what we found in the vehicle and be able to find ways to be able to use aftermarket parts to be able to save the customer some money in the repair. If you think about it from a standpoint of guided repair, the OE is going to tell you to replace it with OE part number 12345. They're not going to give you a choice of all the aftermarket parts out there to be able to repair the car.
And therein lies the unbelievable dilemma. We're going to move forward with this. We're going to get that. And yet, I can imagine a disruptor walking in and saying, you know that part number 123? It's this over here.
That's right. Exactly right. And you know, from our point of view, just because we've moved into the era of software components and so forth, the ability of the aftermarket to be able to interpret the data as well as a franchise dealer, I don't believe it's in question. I mean, we have technology that is in our shops today that are very sophisticated. And, you know, some people are better than others, let's face it. But if you talk to in a very candid way to a lot of franchise dealers, they'll tell you, you know, we have varying levels of expertise in our shops as well, right? We have a couple of real old pros that are there. And then we have a lot of people at the lower end that may be, you know, subject to a lot of churn. They come in and out of our shops on a regular basis. And some of them go to other careers and all the rest. So, you know, there's probably always a couple of old hands who have been around a long time. And they know in this particular brand, this is a problem and et cetera. You know, that's not going to go away, Carm. That kind of expertise, we think, is going to last regardless of the sophistication of the vehicles. Been there, done that, seen this. That kind of knowledge is very important in the trust that the consumer has with people in their vehicles.
So, you're a legacy aftermarket person. I mean, you're just not the VP of emerging technologies. I mean, you've got wrenching and grease under your knuckles, am I right?
Yeah, I started out in the repair side, and I actually managed a 30-bay shop when I was 25 years old. It was in my blood at that point. I really enjoyed it. I'm an IT guy as far as the training that I have. But
oh, tell me, did you ever write any software?
Oh, yeah, I write software. In fact, I've wrote some of the standards that we have in the aftermarket for things like, you know, iShop and IPO and some of those others. But from my end, it's always been, how can we apply technology to improve the business of the aftermarket, whether it was e-commerce or whether it's things like improving the performance of stock in the stores or whatever. So I've had a fairly long career in the aftermarket improving things. But we've never been under threat like we are today, Carmen. And so that's why I'm so pleased to be focusing on this piece directly with the vehicles and the communication side.
So when you were thinking a year ago, and from your perspective and your contribution to Apex, how did SVI come up in your mind? And then, I mean, there's just not one class here, Joe. You really stacked the deck.
Well, we think it's terribly important to share the information about SVI. And the first thing I want to be very clear about, Carm, is that AutoCare has made a big investment sponsoring the development of SVI. And there's no question about that. But it's not our product. We're not selling SVI. SVI is the collection of international standards defined in ISO primarily, but a collection that also includes standards from IEEE and SAN and DIN and SAE and a lot of other places. And that collection of standards come together and allow us to be able to have a secure, direct connection to the vehicle networks that's standardized, and anyone can download the standards and be able to create solutions using these concepts.
Ah.
And so it's what's really great about
open
this,
architecture concept.
Exactly.
Okay.
So.
All right.
And it's based on the OSI model. And that model is an architecture that says, you know, these layers that we stack up are independent. So somebody comes over to me, you know, very commonly they'll ask a question about, well, you know, there's this big deal about whether DSRC is the future of, you know, vehicle connectivity, or is it, you know, LTE, or, you know, all those things. The great news about it is SVI doesn't care. It's completely and totally agnostic about the lower layers of communication. As long as you support the protocols that are stacked up, and the applications will still perform the same way. So it also insulates you from the advance, because it's, you know, it's generation 5 right now. It'll be generation 6 then for the next LTE and et cetera down the line. So whether it's cellular communications or digital short-range communications or whatever.
So whatever you want to build into your car, SVI will be able to pull it in, push it out.
To accommodate it.
Yeah.
Wow. And the great thing about this as a developer then is it insulates you from this change, and you don't have to get in these dogfights of trying to protect a particular technology at a time, because they advance.
Okay. So we were talking ATIS a couple of years ago, and we're talking it now big and
right, strong.
Am I way ahead of the curve, or are we way ahead of the curve on SVI? I mean, give me a timeline.
So SVI, they're essentially the standards. As I said, there's about 20-some standards that make up the collection that is SVI. The final standard will be in place in mid-year to late 2019. So at that point, every standard that is part of the composition of SVI will be already public and available for download from the standards bodies. And we're going to be creating a document in ISO that will guide developers in how to be able to put those together, whether you're creating an application for diagnostics or for connecting with the ITS infrastructure or telematics. So the point of this being that once you get this architecture down, Carm, you can actually create an application for any of these things and reuse that architecture across all of them. So it's really going to be a great enabler for people creating apps in the future of vehicles as well. I mean, keep in mind that, you know, the cell phone can be a player in intelligent transport systems as well. And we've seen a bit of this with some of the folks, you know, Apple and Google and a few people have kind of dabbled in the world of vehicle applications. And so you can get some information.
So you mean the cell phone's hooked to the car?
And the
cell phone is hooked to the ITS.
That's right. And this is really important. I mean, I don't want to get too far down that road, but if you're a pedestrian, you can have a phone connected to the ITS infrastructure, and if you step out in the road, it's going to also give the information to the car that's going down the road on that level 5 that you were talking about before, and it's going to give the information to the vehicle that said, a passenger just stepped off the curb, so that it doesn't have to rely on just the sensors inside the vehicle to give it that information.
Okay, again, crystal ball, 30 years?
Well, for level 5, I suspect we won't see that for probably 15 or 20 years. Okay. I mean, I'm going to be totally candid with you on this, Carm. It's going to take a while. Some people were pretty aggressive about their projections. I kind of take my cues from the CARS group, which is Clemson University's Automotive Research Group. And they've laid out a roadmap for all these technologies. In fact, I'm going to share a bit of that tomorrow when I do the ADAS presentation. And they're really talking about, you know, 2035, maybe 2035, we'll start seeing some of these fully automated vehicles. And some people prefer fully automated over autonomous because autonomous kind of means they're totally by themselves with no connectivity.
I love the word fully automated.
Fully automated.
Because it actually could allow me to flip a switch and be in control in
that's
my
right.
mind.
Well, know? I think that most people want that. I mean, that's really a level 4. A level 5 has no pedals, has no steering wheel. I mean, you're totally at the mercy of what the
so
of
level
what
5 won't allow you? You're saying there won't be level 5s without
steering
wheels?
A real level 5 means that you should never have to take control of the vehicle.
Oh, wow.
I know. I'm afraid that may not be something I run out and buy when they first come out, Carm.
I saw that in a science fiction movie once.
Yeah, exactly. I think I enjoy driving, I guess, more than that. But
yeah.
But fully automated vehicles are ways down the road. I think that, you know, I mean, today when you're in the shop and you're working on vehicles, what you're seeing is ADAS equipment in various forms. Some of them have, you know, maybe 6 sensors. Some of them have 10 sensors maybe now. And all those are reporting information. That information is being recorded. I will tell you that some of the manufacturers are very concerned about the amount of information that gets accumulated over time by all those sensors. You're supposed to keep this information for a period of time just in case you're involved in an accident. And I don't mean you get in an accident. You cause an accident. And so what they'll do is they'll say, oh, well, this car was there and he ran across and he ran through the light and he didn't get hit, but he caused the accident. Give us the information from your sensors so we know whether or not the sensors were warning you, or if you were putting on your brake, did you try to slow down or did you accelerate? All of that information. One of the manufacturers was telling us it's coming into the nature of petabytes.
Which petabytes?
Petabytes, yeah, which is millions of gigabytes of information.
Wow, I thought of degree of fault. the data, that's the shark here.
It is.
Data.
Yeah.
And then I wrote down the degree of fault. My sensors said
right.
that you are
right.
not 100% at fault.
So what's your culpability, Carm, yeah. in all this, right? I mean, at the end of the day, you know, you can imagine the future lawyers and all of their analysis that they're going to have to do to say, well, you know, I mean, Carm didn't cover the brake because, you know, the sensor didn't indicate that. And it shows right here that there was none of the information coming across. So it's the fault of the technician who repaired the car last. I mean,
look at our dashboard here, jury.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Wow. kudos to you for bringing SVI and all the tech programs here to Apex. I can't help but think we did a show earlier on the value of Apex really turning around and involving the service professional in providing this level of, call it content, but it's really the context of our industry.
Yeah, I think that's very, very true. The context of the vehicle is really morphing so quickly. If you think about it from a standpoint of it being an actor on the road and all of the information that's being collected by the vehicle and that it's contributing to the overall orchestration of traffic flow and all that, it's kind of been one of those things that, you know, I guess always existed, but we certainly weren't aware of it in the detail we're going to be in the future.
Wow. Finally, anything? Anything I missed or we missed?
I don't think so, Carm. I mean, from our end of it, it's a matter of making sure that we continue to have access to the vehicle. It's a matter of making sure that access is secure, making sure people can't hack vehicles, making sure that we know who's working on it, make sure they're qualified to work on it, and making sure that the consumer has the choice and has the right to direct information, especially when it comes, there's really two flavors. One is health of the vehicle. That's mostly what you and I have been talking about this past few minutes, but it's also behavioral information. So do you really want to know where the car was parked the last 200 times? Do you want to know who was in the car? Because the sensors will tell you the weight of the person that was in the car and all the rest. And there's reasons for that from a standpoint of, you know, making sure the airbags are deployed correctly for different frame sizes and all that. But again, somebody can find out, you know, your daughter was driving the car and this is where she parks and this is where she lives and all the rest of that information.
Someone can find out.
Yes, because what happens here is the behavioral information, as I said, even though there's good reasons to collect it, that information is being collected, and most OEs have most of this information today. Now, what's done with that, there are, to my knowledge, there are no actual regulations. There are no rules about, you know, who can buy that information, who can sell that information. And most consumers don't even know that that information is being collected.
Yeah, we checked the box on the user, end user agreement, the license agreement.
You certainly did, and you probably did it very quickly. And you were so anxious to get in that brand new car, it was a very quick transactional decision.
Yes, so. and I gave up the world of data that I really should control and have. And so, thank you so much for being on that front line for the industry, and I would love to keep this dialogue alive.
I think
we owe the industry at least a quarterly trip down the Joe Register CARM discussion pathway to tell us, you know, it doesn't have to always be SVI and emerging technologies. Well, it needs to be emerging tech, but Joe, from your perspective, you're seeing everything, and I would love for you to come back as often as you want, when you got anything new to share and to maybe energize and excite my listener, our listener, our aftermarket, but to try to create the importance of staying on that cutting edge. Because if you're not sitting on the edge, Joe, you're taking up too much room.
That's right, Carp. And quite frankly, I would be delighted to continue the conversation. You ask great questions, and I think a lot of people are just beginning to understand this new world of automotive and automotive repair and how their life is going to change as a result of all this automation and all of the new information that's being collected about their behavior and behind the wheel, as well as the health of their vehicle.
So, I couldn't help but think, as a summary point, Joe, that we are looking to recruit young people in our industry.
Yes.
You made the greatest case for, I don't want to be a mechanic, you made the greatest case for someone wanting to be a computer, diagnostician, technician,
right.
Chief scientist, you know, head brainiac of networking. Come on, we need young, really smart people to figure this out.
Desperately. And you know, the interesting thing about this is the fact that a lot of those skills you know, are present in young folks today. I mean, when they start working on vehicles, they also spend a lot of time with their phone, and they spend a lot of time with computers. And the synergies there are getting greater and greater. And so understanding why the vehicle behaves the way it does, a lot of that is knowledge about computers and about communications and about systems.
Honored to have Joe Register, VP of Emerging Technologies from AutoCare, on this show, Remarkable Results Radio. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you so very much for the invite, Carm.
Hey, thanks, Joe Register, for giving us a glimpse of what the future holds for secure vehicle interface. I'm glad you're taking an important lead with the AutoCare Association to guarantee the aftermarket a seat at the table as the rules for SVI are birthed and written. This episode's key talking points can be found at remarkableresults.biz/E381. Hey, don't forget the books page. All the books we talk about here in the podcast are listed there. And recently, some new photos put up on the photos page from Apex 2018. Hey, have a great day, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.